read chapter 14, which describes the three modes of internal nature. In the 13th chapter, Krishna begins a new topic after describing devotional service in the 12th chapter. In chapter 13, describes how the soul is situated within the material body and the limitations that that soul, due to its identification with the body, has, describes his limitations. He is basically limited by his field of activities, the khetra or chetra. This chetra is the material body and the capacities of the material body. And we have no ability to perceive beyond the capacity of our material body. So the chetra gya is the soul, the knower of the field of activities. He is aware of everything that goes on within his own field of activities. And then there is another jetragya, the super soul, who not only knows what is going on in my body and in my mind, but knows what's going on in your body, in your mind, in your body, in your mind, in yours, and yours, and yours, and yours. So he is the knower of all fields, the super soul, Paramatma. And there are some nice verses in this 13th chapter that describe the Paramatma. In 1322, it doesn't describe the Paramatma, but rather it describes a different type of a Purusha. This is a very famous verse and a very important verse. Purusha, prakriti stohi, bhute prakriti taniha, karanam guna sangasya sarasari sohi, janayashu. This chapter 13. We're reading up to chapter 14. So this verse describes that within this, again, this material body, there is a soul who is actually prakriti. That means we are all female in relationship to Krishna. But this prakriti soul is thinking himself not prakriti but purusha. Purusha means the enjoyer. So this purusha, prakriti, situated with prakriti, so he is within the prakriti, situated within the prakriti. Bhunkte, he's trying to enjoy prakriti janguna, things produced by the material nature. And this is the situation of all living entities. We're trying to enjoy those things produced by material nature. We look at everything as an opportunity to enjoy, basically because of what we call Purusha Bhav. What does Purusha Bhav mean? The mood of I am the enjoyer. And when one is in the mood of I am the enjoyer, when we look at anything, we see it as suitable for us to exploit and try to squeeze some pleasure from it. So the Purusha, not the real Purusha, situated with the material nature, he's trying to enjoy those things produced of the material nature. And then Kararam Guna Sangasya, that mood of enjoyment, that tendency to want to be the Purusha, the result of that is Karanam Guna Sangasya, he comes into contact with the three modes of material nature. Karanam Guna Sangasya. And then the result of coming in contact with the three modes of material nature, due to his tendency to enjoy, due to thinking that he's a Purusha, is the last line, Sarasadjoni Jamasu. He has to go into the wombs of so many mothers and come out, 1322, and then start to enjoy and experience happiness and distress, and happiness and distress, and happiness and distress, birth after birth after birth after birth. And it's torture. If it was all distress, it would even be easier than a roller coaster, this up and down of happiness, distress, happiness, distress. It is torture. We like the material world, we have to die and get kicked out of the material world. We hate the material world, we have to live in the material world. This is the very nature whatever you don't want, it will happen. And when you want, what you do want it to happen, it will happen maybe, but then you have to be afraid of losing it. Every situation in the material world is horrible, but it is not the fault of the material energy, it's our mood of Purusha. It's Purusha Bhav. So, here in this verse it describes Karanam Guna Sangrasya, that due to his association with his gunas, the three modes of material nature, they force him into repeated birth and death, and suffering and enjoyment, sada sad, joni, jambas, birth after birth. It's these modes of material nature that are like the prison keepers. This is Maya, Guna Maya. The modes of material nature, they're the prison keepers in the material world. And they force one into so many material bodies one after another. Some material body we may think is wonderful, some material body we may think is horrible, but one after another, into one material body of And the next verse talks about a different type of Purusha, the super soul, who is the real Purusha. He is the Purusha Para, or the superior Purusha. Upadrashtana mantacha, that means the upa, the overseer, upadrashta, is the overseer, the aramanta, the permitter. Bharta, the master, bhokta, the enjoyer, maheshwara, the controller. So the overseer, the permitter, the enjoyer, the master, the controller, Paramatmiti, he is called the Paramatma. And he is within the body as the Purusha Para, the superior Purusha, the supreme Purusha. So, by the mercy of the Super Soul, he's permitting all this to go on, Anamanta. He is overseeing and permitting the souls who are in the mood of Purusha to try to enjoy. Because Krishna has explained this, these connection in this chapter in 1322, the connection between the modes of the material world and the living entity as being caused by his mood of Purusha, and then that mood of Purusha cements him, puts him cemented, he's captured actually by the modes of material nature. So the modes bind him tightly. So Krishna now in chapter 14 is going to explain how the modes of material nature bind the living entity. And they bind the living entity just like there's a folk tale, Hitopadesh tale, some monkey put his hand in a pot, and the pot was one that had a narrow neck. And there was some food in the pot. So he put his hand in, and he was holding the food. And therefore, he couldn't get his hand out. He could get it in, but because his hand was bigger, because he was holding the food, he couldn't get it out. So he's thinking that this pot is holding me so tightly. But why is it holding him tightly? It's because he's so attached to enjoying. And if he would give that up, then he could easily get his hand out. So we're saying them all, the modes are so heavy. It's because our hand is wide open, trying to enjoy as much as we can. As soon as we give that up, we can escape from the binding of the modes of material nature of the pot. So Krishna is now going to describe this beginning in the first text over here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, again I shall declare to you the Supreme Wisdom. He says again because he's just explained it in 1322. And why is it the Supreme Wisdom? Because it will give you liberation, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have achieved the Supreme Perfection. What is the Supreme Perfection? Getting out of the material world, and better than getting out of the material world is performing devotional service. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, now why is Krishna explaining the glories of this knowledge? By understanding this, it is the best of knowledge,
And all the sages, by understanding this, have achieved perfection. And by becoming fixed in this knowledge, one attains the transcendental nature, like my own, Krishna says. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution, the destruction. Why is Krishna glorifying this knowledge? It's because he wants us to listen carefully. So he said, this is so wonderful and so powerful. And if you understand this, you'll be free. The sages have been free. It's the best of knowledge. Everyone wants to hear this wonderful knowledge that is so glorified even by Krishna. So Krishna begins to explain it in text 3. The total material substance is called Brahman. Now he's going to explain how the soul is entangled in the material world. The total material substance called Brahman is the source of birth, and it is that Brahman that I am pregnant, making possible the birth of all living beings, O son of Glorita. So this is further described, this process is further described in the Bhagavatam. First canto is described in the second canto. It's described in Brahma Samhita, how the glance of the Lord, which is Shambhu, goes into this Padari, primal elements, and that glance impregnates all the living entities within the material nature. And then it begins to, the time factor begins to act and everything becomes manifest gradually, the creation. So then Krishna explains, because he is impregnating this material nature, he explains, it should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Aham Vidupada Pita. Krishna is everyone's father, and when we understand that Krishna is everyone's father, we can clearly understand that we are all brothers and sisters like that. So this is the universal principle that unites humanity, and not only humanity, it unites all living entities. We should not be kind to humans and be cruel to animals. Because Krishna is everyone's father, and just like, and because Krishna is everyone's father, therefore he is everyone, the living entities, regardless of their bodies, are relatives. So the animals may be less intelligent, but that doesn't mean we should kill them. If someone is less intelligent, he kills them. That is not good. Thank you. You're less intelligent, but who didn't do well on your test? So now, in text 5, Krishna, so the living entities are placed in the material nature. And now the living entity, it's actually a very mystical thing, that the living entity is spirit. He's Chetragya. He is spirit. He has nothing to do with the property, the material energy. This and is always changing. And the soul is eternal. It is completely different. A different quality. So how do they connect with each other? How does something subtle like the soul connect with the gross material? What is that connecting factor? It is actually Maya and is inconceivable actually. But it is done through the three modes of material nature and the desire of the living entity to enjoy, the attachment to enjoyment. So now Krishna is going to describe the very nature of the living entities in the material world. He's been impregnated in the material world, and Krishna is going to describe how he's attached. So in text 5, how they connected. Material nature consists of three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, with this nature, Almighty Om Dajan, he becomes conditioned by these modes. Condition means control. So as soon as he's put into the material world, just like as soon as a prisoner is put into the prison,
He becomes conditioned or controlled by the laws of that prison, and he has to follow them. He has no choice. So these modes, goodness, passion, ignorance, are like a rope that has three strands, and the three strands are twisted together to give them extra strength, so we cannot break free. Now, what we're going to hear is the influence of each of the three modes of material nature. When I taught this a few years ago as homework, I had all the students, after they heard this, go through, rate themselves. If the number one would be completely in the mode of goodness, and number 81 is completely in the mode of ignorance. So where do they think they stand? What mixtures of goodness and passion, ignorance? And it's very interesting how people analyze themselves. And I think generally, as long as they're not getting a mark or a grade, they do quite well in their analysis of how the modes of material nature affect them. But listen carefully to these descriptions of the modes, and instead of listening how they, oh, I know this one, that's what's his name, he's really passionate, or this one's really ignorant. Instead of doing that, of course we'll never find anyone good, generally. But instead of doing that, let's listen to see how we fit into it, and where we stand, which modes of material nature affect us. Oh, sinless one, the mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating. That means it brings knowledge. And it frees one from all sinful reaction. We heard this already earlier, that when you practice nishkamkama in the mode of goodness, you become free from reaction and understand that we're not our body. And nishkamkama is basically action in the mode of goodness because it's detached. Those who are situated in this mode become conditioned or controlled by a sense of happiness and knowledge. These are the two conditioning factors and controlling factors in this material world for someone in the mode of goodness. This means that due to the happiness they feel, and due to the knowledge they have, and due to the pride that comes along with that, a feeling of superiority, they want to stay in the material world. And that is what the modes of material nature do. It fills us with other kinds of desires other than to serve Krishna, and we want those things, and therefore we don't want to get out of the material world. Yes? And it's also interesting to note that when one is attached to anything in the material world, one will naturally, even if it's something subtle like happiness or knowledge, one will then naturally become attached to the things that bring us happiness and knowledge. And then that attachment, even if these things are in the mode of goodness, that attachment will tend to degrade into passions. Because if you're attached to anything, you have to work to get it. Because you have to be active. And that, therefore, that will tend to bring passion. Therefore, the general tendency is to go down, always. Goodness will tend to degrade to passion, and passion to ignorance. And then we also heard that from Asia Krota, Asia Rajamana, starts with passion, which later turns to ignorance. Generally, in Kali Yuga, people are not, don't have a problem by their being conditioned by goodness. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings. O son of Kunti, because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material fruit of actions. We have unlimited, there's so many things we want to do, just like Prabhupada gave the example of one man who was dying. I think he personally knew this man. He was dying, and he was begging the doctor to extend his life another 2 or 3 years so he could finish his plans. So attached to all the desires we have, all the desires I have, that I want to do it. I want to do it, and I want to stay here to do it.
Even though death will come and pull me away, and we have to leave everything behind when death comes. We cannot take anything we achieve in the material world with us, and yet we're still so attached. How foolish we are. So that's ignorance. So that attachment leads to ignorance and foolishness, naturally. O son of Bharata, know that the mode of darkness, born of ignorance, is the delusion of the embodied living entities. The results of this mode of madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. So someone in the mode of goodness, he is bound into the material world by his sense of superiority and happiness and knowledge, thinking that he's superior to everyone. He's thinking, you know, he's thinking, I'm so much better than everyone else. So to maintain that, he stays in the material world. Someone in passion has no time to leave the material world because he's too busy trying to satisfy his desires.
And someone in the mode of ignorance,
he's so tired. He doesn't have the energy to
material world. Maybe tomorrow I'll consider it.
That's the most of material nature. You don't have any, you can't even desire. It's just so much sleep, madness, too crazy. Like that. So these are the bindings. O son of Bharata, the mode of goodness conditions one to happiness. Passion conditions one to fruitive activities, working to gain so much, and ignorance, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the mode of passion and ignorance, O son of Bharata. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance, and sometimes ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy. Remember that we're souls, actually, and our business and our real life is with Krishna in the spiritual world. Nitya Krishna Nitya Das. We're Krishna's part and parcel. We belong to him in the spiritual world, but instead these modes tie us up. Gunas means ropes also. It means modes, it means ropes, qualities, the three qualities. It means ropes too. So we're bound so tight by these ropes that we don't even know. We're so much in ignorance, we don't even know who we are. And we're thinking we're something, someone that we are actually not. That is ignorance. So actually, ajnana, or ignorance, is the root cause of all problems. The basic ignorance is we identify with the body. So these modes are always fighting each other. Sometimes we're tired, sometimes we're so much energy running around fulfilling all our desires, and sometimes we feel peaceful, and then one, and then the other, and then one and the other. So it's so difficult. In the material world, we're bound so tightly. Sometimes we have, you know, so many desires, we want to accomplish so many things, and the next minute we don't care about anything because we're ignorant, we're just lazy, we don't feel like doing anything, and then the next minute we're very peaceful, and all we want to do is be pure devotees. And the next minute we're running around and going here and going there, and have so many things, and have a list this long, and I want to accomplish anything. And anyone who stops us to ask a question, we knock them out of the way because we have so many things that we have to do, and then get tired again, and it's so hard. And so this way we're just being beaten by the mode. Actually, it's like being whipped. Now you do this, you fool. Quick. Go to sleep. Sorry. Now you run. You run all day long. You run like a dog all day long. The modes. So heavy. Just all day long. Like this. 24 hours a day being beaten. And just try when you have a desire to say no.
I don't want to go
see. And this is what we have to do in Krishna consciousness. The modes are there, but we have to transcend the modes. And this will be explained right at the end. We'll hear more about the modes. Prabhupada actually explains here, I'll read his purport, very important to text 10. When the mode of passion is prominent, the mode of goodness and ignorance are defeated. When the mode of goodness is prominent, passion and ignorance are defeated. And when the mode of ignorance is prominent, passion and goodness are defeated. This competition is always going on. Therefore, one who is actually intent on advancing in Krishna consciousness has to transcend these three modes. The prominence of some certain mode of nature is manifest in one's dealings, in his activities, in his eating. This will also be described in the 17th chapter. This is the easiest way, the 17th chapter explains, the easiest way to understand what modes of material nature are prominent in you is to examine what you like to eat. And that from that you can understand. So all will be explained in later chapters. But if one wants, he can develop by practice the mode of goodness and thus defeat the mode of ignorance and passion. One can similarly develop the mode of passion and defeat goodness and ignorance, or one can develop the mode of ignorance and defeat goodness and passion. And the prime way we can develop these things is our association. If one time I was with Prabhupada in Melbourne, and someone asked him, how do you become sincere? And Prabhupada answered, how do you become a drunkard? If you want to become a drunkard, you associate with drunkards. If you want to become sincere, live with them. Although there are three modes of material nature, if one is determined, he can be blessed by the mode of goodness. And then, one can transcend the mode of goodness, he can be situated in pure goodness, which is called the Vasudeva state, a state in which one can understand the science of God. By the manifestation of particular activities, it can be understood in what mode of nature one is situated. Text 11. The manifestation in the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. Or see from the Bharatas, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, an uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. When there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, O son of Kuru, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifest. When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains the pure higher planets of the great sages. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth amongst those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. The result of pious action is pure, and it is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in the mode of passion results in misery. This is one that I'm fond of remembering because I end up getting this result so often. Well, action done in the mode of passion results in misery. Later it will be explained, it is like nectar in the beginning, but like poison in the end. Action in the mode of passion results in misery. Action in the mode of passion results in misery. And action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. Text 17. Sadvat sanjayate jnanam rajaso lobha evacha pramadamoha tamaso bhavato jnanam evacha. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. What is real knowledge? Knowledge that we are not our body. From the mode of passion, greed, uncontrollable desire develops. And from the mode of ignorance develops foolishness, madness, and illusion. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish world. So this, everything in this world is controlled by the modes. Krishna has said this earlier. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kamani sarvasha ahankara vimudama karta hamiti manite. We're thinking, oh now I desire this, I want to do that. But actually it's just the modes of material nature beating us and forcing us to think in that way. Because of our desire to enjoy, the modes catch us. Or it's rather like this. We catch the modes and they won't let us go because we're holding on too tight. That's really what's happening. So then Krishna explains, very important verse, Nanyam gunaga kataram yada drashtarupatyasi gunivascha pramvete madhvagam sodhigatsuti. When one properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and he knows the Supreme Lord who is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. Madhvagam sodhigatsuti. He attains madhvagam, my nature, which means the spiritual world. When the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and the distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life. So we develop this vision that there is nothing going on in this material world other than the three modes of material nature beating people in different combinations of groups. That is all that is going on. And when we have that vision and know that Krishna is beyond the modes, his activities in the spiritual world or in the material world are not in the material world, they are beyond the modes of material nature. They are purely transcendental, they are on a different platform, they are on the spiritual platform. So when we focus our mind on that realm, and even though we are bound by the modes, they will lessen and loosen. If we learn how to focus our consciousness on that transcendental realm and serve that transcendental realm, even though we may be bound right now. Now, there's some quick Arjuna asks a question, and then the chapter will finish by explaining exactly how to get free from the three modes of material nature. Then if we have a few moments, I'd just like to discuss a problem that we tend to have, that we may have. Arjuna inquired, O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? How does he transcend the modes of material nature? So the first symptom, first question is, how do you recognize someone who is transcendental? The second question is, how does he behave? And the third is, how do you get out? And the third is the last two, how do you get out, is the last two verses in this chapter. And we'll use those more carefully than we will the next four verses, 22 to 25. These answer the two questions of what are his symptoms and what is his behavior if someone is transcendental. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, here's symptoms. O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear. In other words, we have a material body, it's going to be affected by the modes of material nature, but we are not our body, and when the body is feeling one thing, we don't identify with it. We focus our consciousness on Krishna. What is the behavior? One who is, he is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active. It has nothing to do with me. But when we identify with it, then we are trapped. He is situating the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye. In other words, he values nothing in the material world. He doesn't have that desire to enjoy. He's not attached to enjoyment. He doesn't have Purusha Bhav. So therefore, nothing in the material world has any value or is repugnant, repulsive to him, because it's all just composed of the modes of Maya. Krishna's Maya Shakti. Then, the last question. More on behaviors. This is behaviors that are others can perceive. who is situated equally towards the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. He's not of this world, although he may look like he's in the world. Now, in reply to the third question, the final two verses in the stanza. Mam tayo vivachare. Now, what was the third question? How does one get out? Mam chayo vyavachari na ambhakti yo sevate sagunan samatitya itan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full transcendental service, abhyacharena means mam chayo, and to me, vyavacharena means in all circumstances, one who is only serving me, bhakti yoga in the sevate, by devotional service, saganan samatityaitan, he transcends all the modes of material nature, brahma-bhuyaya kapate, and he's situated on the samadhi platform, on the spiritual platform. So here is Krishna's suggestion to get out of these modes which are just beating us, that we should surrender to the lotus feet of our spiritual master and serve him, and therefore instead of listening to the dictates of the modes of material nature, we listen to his dictates no matter what our mind tells us, and we are free. We're out, because he's representing Krishna, so instead of listening to the modes, we're listening to Krishna. So it is still on the sadhana level, but yet on the practice level, but yet it is freedom from the modes of material nature. So therefore we have to hold tight to the lotus feet of our spiritual master. One who surrenders to Krishna at once surmounts the influence of material nature. And then, as Krishna says, so then come to the Brahman platform, the spiritual platform, and then Brahmano hi pratishta ham amritasya yasya cha shashvatasya chadarmasya sukasya kantikasya cha. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. So that impersonal Brahman is resting on me, that Brahma platform is resting on me. It is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and it is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. We are meant to exist on that platform. So that devotional service unto Krishna brings us right to the transcendental platform. Any questions? Finally, then, class that ends early in time for questions. I know you have a question. Yes.
We were talking about 14.6, about the mode of goodness. There's those situated in the mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. And if you're saying that someone that who's has some human understanding is not in his body, there's some realization of body becomes free from all sinful reactions.
I can't follow.
Someone who understands he's not in his body because he's practicing nishkam karma.
That means nishkam karma means he's in the mode of goodness.
Doesn't need for a lot of realization.
From that will come realizing that he's not in his body. From practicing nishkam karma, working in the mode of goodness in a detached fashion, he'll realize it's not his body. Knowledge will come. Sattvam sanjaya sejnanam. And then, when he focuses on that position, when he focuses his mind on Krishna, then he will become liberated.
Until then, he'll be
by then.
Who will take the form of devotional service?
Where is this?
This verse, 22. So Osama Khan does not take illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present.
Yeah, right.
So when they are present, this is what goodness and passion or ignorance, and yes. From the ocean of faith, so you see this attachment, right? So this is just me, I should just ignore this.
When we get hit by the modes of material nature, we can focus our mind on serving Krishna and not identify with the particular mode that is affecting us. We should always remain separate from the modes that affect us. We should not identify with the mode or react with it. We should identify with being Krishna's servant. But yet, the mode of goodness, we should cultivate the mode of goodness.
But when I see there is in my heart some attachment, even when I do devotional service.
But the attachment to Krishna is not is very good, not fair. You want to make sure that the lotus sweets are just nice for Krishna's pleasure. This is devotional service and this is bhakti. Because the service must be done with attentiveness. Propitious pleasure. But when we're attached for us, when Krishna's not in the center, but our pleasure is in the center, is contamination of passion.
These qualities, it says that 22 to 25, looking at the clock of earth and a piece of gold with an equal eye, being the same in happiness and distress, and treating friends and enemies alike. Well, now I can see 5 minutes, this also mentioned earlier.
What?
This one is nowhere it's mentioned earlier.
Is that in chapter 5?
6.
6. Because we
use 6 is good. Or actually, yeah, it's actually in 5, in 12, in 2.
But there's one place where you mentioned
friends and enemies equally. That's in chapter 6. Krishna told Arjuna.
That's the hardest.
Yeah, that's why.
It's 9.
That's even harder than seeing gold and earth.
Yes.
That's from chapter 6.
Yeah. But Krishna tells Arjuna that you have to practice this equanimity. And Arjuna says, no,
I cannot do it. I'm on the battlefield.
Right. Oh, yeah.
In verse 11, what does Krishna mean when he says that all the gates of the body are illuminated by... like a practical thing.
Clean!
It says that the result of ignorance is foolishness. Can you elaborate on that?
I'm elaborating on it all day long, usually.
Well, in contrast to how misery results from passion.
It's clear, isn't it? Foolishness.
Well, this is how I understand it. Like the one in mode of passion, he's foolish, but he doesn't realize he's foolish. He thinks he's going to get something. So at least he has some idea of what he's doing. But the person...
No, it doesn't mean foolish in that. Ultimately, anyone in Maya is making a fool out of himself, for sure. But in the mode of ignorance, the kind of foolishness is something, a different kind of foolishness. When you're really making a fool, you're really foolish. You think you're doing something wonderful, but everyone thinks you're the greatest fool. You're not getting it. Yeah. All the time we see.
And is the answer here in 25, the symptoms and behaviors, relevant behaviors of symptoms?
According to my notes, 22. Symptoms is up to, it does not hate illumination, attachment, delusion when they are present, or long from them when they disappear. Behavior here is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities. Yeah, the rest is behavior. All the rest is behavior. But out of the behavior, the I'm not sure what you mean.
Basically, there are two verses discussing the...
What verses are you referring to?
15 and 18.
Okay. Let me just read that to make it clear. So, meaning, in this one, it means that if you die in the mode of passion, you take your birth on earth. And in the mode of ignorance, as a human, and then ignorance as an animal. Yeah. And then at 18, those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion, again, live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish world. So you want to... Huh?
Verses,
yeah,
and
animal.
Sorry?
Verses
and
animal. Yeah, well, animal kingdom is certainly hellish. As opposed to material happiness, because he said previously that material happiness is born of the mode of goodness. So this is beyond the mode, so it's ultimate, meaning it's eternal happiness. And your ultimate means you can't find any happiness greater. He's specifically saying that it's above material happiness. That's the point. Not happiness born of the mode of goodness. Because he just said that happiness born of the mode of goodness is a conditioning factor, but this is beyond the modes of material nature. So it's happiness born of being engaged in our spiritual constitutional position. The Brahman platform. The Krishna is Sri Goswami says that Krishna is the concentrated form of Brahman. In other words, his body is composed of spiritual energy.
So my
ultimate in the sense of beyond matter. But we consider that ultimate happiness is suicide compared to bhakti. Because this is described in Nectar of Devotions. So many quotes saying that that happiness times a billion is like one drop of the happiness of pure bhakti. But still, that is a billion times better than material happiness. Because material happiness is misery, and there's no misery.
So here, ultimate,
that's
what we reference to the material.
But you can also say that it is the constitute. The Brahman platform is the spiritual platform, which is the constitutional position, the natural position on which bhakti takes place. Unless one is on that platform, one can, the pure platform, Sudhasattva platform, one cannot perform bhakti yoga. So it's referring to the platform, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, the platform on which spiritual life actually takes place is this spiritual platform. That's what it means. Clear or not clear?
How we are desiring different things in this material world, actually we are being controlled by the three modes of material nature. So how our independent nature goes with this? Because nature we are independent.
So the question is, how? Where is it? If we're just completely controlled, how are we independent? So depending upon which modes of material nature control us, we have a little independence or less independence. If we're in the mode of ignorance, practically we have no independence. But in the mode of goodness, we have some independence. And especially that independence is to take to the transcendental path from that.
That means, like, my second question deserves that only. For example, first time when we are coming in with the devotees, so that time we are making choice whether to, for example, coming to Sunday in the temple, or we can go to some other place.
Yeah, we have to have some freedom, otherwise the preaching, there would be no use in preaching to someone. There was no, if they could not execute their independence.
But that is within the devotees.
No. To decide to come in, the Krishna inside is telling you to come and you're agreeing. So you're using your freedom properly.
But then comes the mode of goodness, or is it above the mode?
No, it means that's true freedom, above the mode. But when you're in the, if one is in the mode of goodness, he can hear Krishna saying, go to the temple. If one's in the mode of passion, he may hear Krishna, but he's hearing so many other things as well, so many other desires. And one in the mode of ignorance, he can't hear anything because he's so covered. It's like, if you listen to the radio or something, and sometimes you get four or five stations at once. So that's like the mode of passion. You know, you have so many things in your ear that you do this, do that, and have to do so many things. That's the mode of passion. So you can't, and one of those voices may be, go to the temple. So you have so many things that you can't hear.
When you're giving yourself to the devotee that's running everywhere, and then when someone comes up to ask you something, it's like, yes, it's time. Lots of time I find myself doing the same thing.
Yeah, but
so I'm planning my time on chanting. I've got an hour's time, I've got a couple of rounds, I've got the gayatri, I've got to read, it's time over. It's all Krishna. So why am I still bound by the words?
Because it's not really for Krishna. It's sudden for me. We're taking our material conditioning and using it in Krishna service. We're taking our material conditioning and using it in Krishna service. So that's purifying. But we still have some karma for other karma.
So how would
slowly it happens that we become purified?
If you put all of those things to do, is it not that we've got all those things to do?
No, we do, maybe. But there's many ways to look at it. One is that you're gonna, when you have, at least for myself, I see I have a long list of things to do. And no matter how frantically I work, I never finish them all anyway. And nor does the list ever get smaller. So, understanding that, you can be more detached. And even though we have so many things to do, we could proceed at a more reasonable pace. And we could proceed with less passion. You understand what I mean? In other words, you're detached with knowledge. What is the real discrimination of what do I really have to do? I'm keeping Krishna conscious, if I'm losing my Krishna consciousness, I'm thinking of the results only, am I forgetting Krishna? So these things can keep us in the mode of goodness. Yeah. One more question.
This verse, 22:25, in the beginning of the verse, there's a line which describes that one who does not hate illumination.
Yeah.
And also, he who longs for illumination. Can you just explain practically what illumination really means?
It means the mode of goodness.
Like, can we recognize that the artist is self-illuminated by this inspiration? That can be passion also.
Passion.
Right, it's passion.
Mode of goodness, the symptoms are given. You are detached, you're peaceful, you're satisfied, you don't need anything. You're only acting out of duty. Understand there's nothing really to achieve in this world. That's goodness. and therefore you are peaceful and no fear. That's good. That's good because it's based on knowledge, actually. Okay, last. Questions. One, two, three, and that's all. But you have to ask me an easy one this time.
Referring to the 2014-26,
yeah.
Is it possible that someone without, you know, full stomach of the vijnana, full stomach of the vijnana, if he's praying to Krishna and trying to transcend the modes, might he still be unsuccessful? Can you give an example?
If someone doesn't have full sambandhagyan, what is full sambandhagyan?
In other words, if he doesn't understand how everything relates to Krishna, so then when he wants to see this in relation to Krishna, but yet he's praying, oh Krishna, let me engage in your service, but still.
But that's only a method of seeing Krishna everywhere. If someone loves Krishna and is always praying to Krishna, he doesn't have to look at the material world to see Krishna. In other words, if he's always praying, Krishna, I am yours, please take me. And there's no need for him to look at the trees to see that Krishna, the hair on Krishna's body and Krishna and that. He doesn't need that. If one's always praying to Krishna, then he's already praying to Krishna.
The basis of how Brahman that Krishna refers to in verse 27, is that the same that he's speaking about in chapter 4, verse 24? Saying that
the consummation
is absolute and that yourself is
on
the same spiritual
basis. That means that it's referring to the Vedas, right? That when you're doing a Vedic sacrifice, the person who's doing the sacrifice, the thing that's offered, the system for doing it is all absolute because it's coming from the absolute.
The prophet said one who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, so it's like sacrifice is leading up to surrendering to the spiritual mind.
I think this doesn't have anything to do with that.
Same.
Doesn't seem like it. Last question.
You were saying that by examining what kind of food we like to eat, we can determine our mode. But isn't it that most devotees, they like to eat food in the mode of goodness, sweets, sweet and juicy. So, for sure, I'm not in the mood of goodness. So
did you read the 17th chapter where it describes the foods in the modes?
Yeah.
So, which one?
Very salty, very punchy, and hard food.
That's passion.
But in India, if you compare it to the West, you get very hot stuff, but for an Indian, it would be there. It's very medicine.
Oh? Yeah. If someone thinks that very, very hot sabji is very, very delicious, and he's used to it, whether he's Indian or anywhere, he's in more fashion.
What about chips and tomatoes?
Well, they're in the more transcendental. Pizza, ice cream, chips. Completely transcendental. Let's all go to the restaurant.